Okay, looks like we've got notification, so we're going to get started. This is episode two. Our cheesy title is Learning Matrix, Choose the Red Rubric, or What's Changing and What Comes Next. Essentially, this is going to be the impact of AI on higher ed in particular. This is us giving you a broad overview. Mm-hmm. I'm Sean Huss, this is Bhaskar Ghosh, per usual. We're also in a new setting, StreamYard. You'll see the duck, I think, in the upper right-hand side of the screen or right-hand corner of the screen. And I've gotten my mic from home, so hopefully I'm at home. So hopefully this will sound better. That's all based on your feedback, so we appreciate it. And I think probably the best starting point is to get at the headlines. And the headlines really generally say that, you know, there's this broad sort of pandemic, if you will, of AI-fueled academic dishonesty. Right. And the real transformation in education is that. But honestly, the more we read, and we're going to draw on particularly a book called Teaching AI by Bowen mm-hmm. and Watson, AI and the Future of Education by Shaw, and then AI for Educators by Miller, it turns out that the academic dishonesty is important, but it's not the issue. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And thank you for the introduction. Yes, we're in a new setting this time around, and you know, we're upping our production. So I'm liking where this podcast is going already. So coming back to your question. So absolutely, like, you know, AI isn't just about plagiarism, honestly. And that's something that I feel very strongly about, because I almost feel like we need to shift the way that we are assessing our, if you call it an assignment, if you call it a project. Times are changing, and I almost feel like the problems need to change accordingly as well. Because, you know, you really can't go back into the days and be like, you know, for example, since I'm in the computer science field, you can't just be like, you know, write a program that adds two numbers, right?
Right.
At this point of time, you don't even have to be a computer science major to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Anybody can do that. Therefore, I feel like, you know, our assignments need to change, and there has to be a shift in, you know, how knowledge is almost produced, shared, and evaluated from our perspective. What do you think about that?
No, I think that's true. I think, you know, we're not at this point in a battle to stop AI. No. We can't do that. Mm-mm. We're essentially in a race, particularly in higher ed, to rethink and rework how students do the work and what we're assessing. Right. Because like we talked about the last time, if AI can pass a business school exam or a bar exam, then we're probably testing the wrong things. And I think that's where we need to go. And interestingly enough, you know, we've been meeting with departments and talking about their use of AI, and we met mm-hmm. with English yesterday. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it kind of surprised me. They aren't as resistant to it. I think what they're concerned about is the end product thinking that we see in students and faculty, where it's the paper that's what that is the important thing. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that AI can do that. Right. And so we have to rethink. And so we had a really long, productive conversation, I think, about process mm-hmm. and how you think about more about process, where the end product is just the thing that happens and the learning is really occurring in process. I mean, wouldn't you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that concern is valid for like literally every other department or any kind of field that we're taking a look at. And we're always so end result oriented or end goal focused that we forget about the whole process of learning and, mm-hmm. you know, how we can make learning fun. Because at this point, people have played so much video games and they have their attention spans are really short. Right.
Right.
So again, like, you know, we can just assume that, you know, our students or, you know, our next generation is going to learn the same way that we learned. Mm-hmm. So we need to make those changes and we need to make those shifts to reach out to them, because at the end of the day, I feel that motivation is what differentiates. I really don't want to use the terms, but it differentiates a student that's doing better and who's not doing that well. So it's all about, you know, getting the student motivated enough to actually do something.
Right. And yeah, it's that passion. Like
it's,
you say, right?
Yeah, that thing. And that's why I think, you know, professors or teachers are that important because they kind of try to fuel that passion. Learning is free at this point, and this is something that I even talk about in my classes. Like, if you go to YouTube, literally anything that we talk about in schools, it's there for free. Mm-hmm. Why would somebody come pay for college and come, go to a classroom and learn? Because it's been like, this has been around since like 5,000 years. Like it started in like China, Asia, where the idea of a classroom kind of started. So this idea isn't going to go away anywhere. Come AI, come anything else. I think we need to reevaluate ourselves as professors, as teachers, because our role isn't going to end in society anytime soon. And, that's what I feel. Don't you think that too?
Well, I think that's true. And I think what that does is that sort of points to the fact that, the tendency with a new technology, just out of the social technology stuff, is that there's the initial reaction is to ban the tool or double mm-hmm. down on detection. And I think that's what mm-hmm. we're seeing. That's reactive. And really, I think the more vital question is, what are we asking students to learn? What are we trying to get them to show us? And what is, in grad school, we call it informed technical expertise, because that's really what we bring as professors. What is the character of that informed technical expertise? And so what we need to do is not understand what's wrong with AI and not just what it automates, but think also at the same time in terms of what it enables. What does this open up for us? Mm-hmm. What kinds of learning are we going to see in the future as we move into this brave new world that's where, like I said, we can't stop AI at this point.
No.
It's mm-hmm. it's more about how do we rethink it and make it fit into our world rather than us let it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll get more into the role of teachers further into the podcast.
Right.
But there's an interesting quote that, we've discussed about from the Teaching with AI book is, all assignments are now AI assignments.
Right. whether you want them to be or not, right?
It's true. And, I think it's something that everybody's grappling with at this point. What do you think?
Well, I think that's true. And I think, we have to think in terms of what's going on with the technology and in general, see it is not just another new tool, and also see it from the perspective of students. Just as a side note, we talked with the English faculty, like I mentioned, and I asked them if they thought the students were being malicious in their use of AI. And they said, which is where I think most faculty will land, no, that's not what's going on. They're in product focused. Mm-hmm. And that's just a feature of using a new tool. And what we're gonna have to do is we're gonna have to model appropriate behaviors for how to use it, build that into assignments. And as a new tool, it is a different kind of tool than the calculator. And that analogy, honestly, it kind of grates on me a little bit because I don't think it's exactly one-to-one. Oh yeah, we have calculators, so now you don't have to see the math. That's not really what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is this technology thinks with students and then helps them produce the work, right?
Absolutely.
So you actually participate in the generation of the product or mm-hmm. the end result in process. I don't know. I mean, how do you feel about that? Am I crazy?
And no, not at all. And that kind of leads us to, asking the question, like, what's actually new about this technology, right? So
right.
Again, like, this really isn't just another tool that we can use. This is going to reshape everything, right? I think if humans would kind of consider this as a buddy that they have, who knows, like, who might know everything, take it with a grain of salt, because sometimes
right. it doesn't know everything.
It really does not know everything. It's like a toddler, so
right.
it really does not. But I almost feel that, humans can be a little more efficient, because at the end of the day, there are many tasks that AI kind of makes a lot easier for us, and more complex tasks that are a little difficult for humans to perform. For example, if for anomaly detection, right? It'll be tough mm-hmm. for humans to kind of, it won't be impossible, but it'll be difficult for humans to track anomaly, whereas AI is going to do that in like 5 seconds.
Right.
So why not use the power that, humans have created to help you out in those situations, right? So, and, I'm mm-hmm. all for that. And again, it's just like Miller calls it, it's like a Swiss Army knife mm-hmm. at this point.
Yep.
It can do It can do everything for you, but again, like with a grain of salt, don't believe everything that you said that you know, that it says. Funny thing, I had a student yesterday who couldn't install a software, and we walked through the whole excuse me software installation in class. Right, there's a whole web page that does it for you. And he just comes up to me and he tells me, hey, I can't install this software. I don't know what's going on. And I was like, didn't you follow along in class? He's like, yes, I did it in class, but I don't know what's happening right now. I'm like, did you follow the webpage or did you follow ChatGPT? And he was like, well, I just follow ChatGPT a little bit. So there you go. So just don't believe everything that you... that you read on ChatGPT. It doesn't know everything.
Well, and doesn't know everything, but it is different than something like Google. Because I was thinking about this the other day. I remember when Wikipedia came out, everybody freaked out, right? Mm-hmm. And that's more plagiarism. And so you can kind of deal with it. But going back to the Google versus ChatGPT, if you Google something, it finds the source. And ChatGPT essentially tries to be the source. Mm. And I don't trust everything I Google.
Right.
And I don't trust everything on Wikipedia. So why would I trust this particular device that's now trying to be the actual source? I mean, yeah. I think that's what we have to do, is we have to realize that's how it fits in. It's just another step in that iteration between, first you have the internet and Google and access to everything. Then you have Wikipedia, which is sort of scraping and using crowdsourcing to summarize everything. Mm-hmm. And now ChatGPT and other AIs are kind of doing both of those things at the same time. Right. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this kind of leads me to think about something that I was reading about the other day, which is there is a webpage called Lucy.ai, I think that's what it's called. Correct me if I'm wrong. So you can buy agents, like agentic AI.
Oh, wow. You can do that now.
Yeah. It's like, what, 10 grand a year, I think.
Oh, wow.
But the scary part is, or not the scary, but, you know, the fascinating part is you can now buy agent swarms. So you can buy like a bunch of agents. So right, for example, if you say, hey, I'd like to plan a party. That's all you have to say, like where the party's at and what time the party's at. Everything else is going to be done by AI for you. Your invites are going to be readied. Everything's going to be booked. Like you just, whoever has ever arranged a party knows how much goes behind it. Now imagine you, nobody having to do that work, and AI just does it for you.
Right. And that's at our conference in Florida. That's kind of the way they framed it in the opening keynote, which is, we've got to rethink assignments and not think of them in terms of what they do relative to busy work, right?
Right.
It's the busy work that students become sort of demoralized and uninterested and unmotivated over. So what you do is you get them engaged in the process. And this may be an opportunity to do that.
Right. Absolutely.
Mostly because I think students come in with some sense of AI already, even though it may not be complete and it's also flawed. We were asking some students, you know, about AI use, and here's one I never heard of. They mentioned Snapchat AI. Does it have an AI? I don't even know what Snapchat is, really. I don't have it, but
yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm practically a Luddite. So. Right. To the kids.
Snapchat, like every social media at this point has some kind of AI associated to it. So it's like, you know, you can just pick any social media platform. It has some kind of AI that's associated to it.
They were using it to do assignments, though, and I didn't know that you could do that. So
you can do. So again, like they've made agents. So again, like you're calling it agents, but they've basically made a specialized chatbot almost, right? So you can make a chatbot that specializes in math. You can make a chatbot that specializes in physics, in chemistry, name it, right? You can make different chatbots, and you just ask questions to that chatbot. It knows stuff just because, A, you can train it. So you can be like, hey, these are all the sources. These are the books that I want you to train yourself on.
Right.
Please go ahead and do that. So it's there. Meta has it. Instagram has it. Snapchat has it. Like you name it, everybody has it at this point.
Yeah, well, the reason I mentioned that they have more familiarity, that indicates two things to me. One, that they, in some instances, they may be a little bit ahead of the faculty, particularly mm-hmm. when they come to school. Mm-hmm. But two, they don't have the normative structure necessary to use it appropriately. Right. So, you know, the students ultimately come in. So AI doesn't start at the university level. It actually starts before the university.
Yeah.
Right. And so mm-hmm. that means that we have to pay some attention to what's going on even in K through 12.
Absolutely.
And we got that question yesterday. I thought it was a brilliant question from Emily Hoffman, who said, mm-hmm. all right, if we write a policy at Tech, what does that imply for concurrent students? Because concurrent students would be taking the classes before they're actually, you know, typically you do that mm-hmm. in high school. Mm-hmm. So which policy applies? And we're going to have to coordinate and be aware of what the impacts of K through 12 are as well, don't right. you think?
Absolutely. I mean, like right now we are kind of thinking of an umbrella policy. Maybe it gets involved, or if, you know, there has to be some kind of a policy that everybody agrees on at this point, because
right.
Yeah, we just can't make nuclear policies and just people kind of fall through the gaps. So they're like, you know, well, it was different when I was in school, but, you know, it's different over here. But then when I go to my workplace, it's absolutely different.
Right. It's always different when you were in school, right?
Of course, right?
These kids and their rock and roll.
So yeah, it's just like, you know, and again, it's levels of AI literacy as well. Like, again, how much AI is allowed at home? Like, who governs right. that? Like, do your parents govern that? How open are they to AI literacy, or, you know, all of that? Because this is new to them as well, right? We didn't right. grow up, like, you know, being a new parent, like, we didn't grow up when AI was around. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were like, you know, we spent half of our time outside. We came back home, watched TV for an hour, and fell asleep because we were so tired from playing outside.
That's right. And we walked to school uphill in both ways in the snow, right? Yeah. But no, that's true. I mean, I remember a time even before computers, personal computers, mm-hmm. and before cell phones. So I'm dating myself here. But you know, we've all been witnesses to some of these major transformational revolutions. And mm-hmm. honestly, that's why I'm interested in this, is because I think this could potentially be printing press level transformation. I mean, I think this is a big one. So with my kid, for instance, he's 14, we're looking at Aegis camps over the summer that have to do with not only AI, because he does code in Python, so it's partly Python camp, but also it's all about AI ethics. So now he's not terribly excited about it so far, but we'll get there. I think we can get him to go. But I think no matter what he decides to do, he's going to need to know at least how this is going to fit into his world, because this is his world. And your daughter's younger than him, because she's practically newborn.
Yeah.
It's going to be radically different from hers compared to my son. Mm-hmm. So, we have to think about this stuff.
Yeah. So. And now that you like say it, just another side note before we move on. I mean, so if AI is being moderated, and that's something that, you know, everybody who's working behind AI, that's a word that they hate. Right. Mm-hmm. We don't like content moderation, because then you're telling me what to do. Then you're telling me what to think. And I don't like that. Right. But you see, the flip side of this is it can literally tell you whatever it wants you to think. Right. There are no guardrails, no nothing.
Right.
If I come up with something, you know, that's a little disruptive, or like, you know, it's bad for society, it can spread like wildfire, and there are no guardrails. Nobody's checking that. So people might end up believing that, which is so funny story. Have you heard of WhatsApp?
Yeah, application WhatsApp. I've heard of it.
Okay. So back home in India, WhatsApp is your mode of communication, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you remember, but way back in WhatsApp, you could forward a message 100 times, okay? Mm. So any message that you get, like more than 100 times, you could forward it to everybody on your list and some more, okay? Mm-hmm. In a village, one fine day, somebody had come in. Some person saw this person and didn't like him, and said that, well, you know, there's this guy over here, he's kidnapping every kid in town, so please be careful.
Okay? Yeah.
That's it. This is just fake news. Like, you know, he just made it up on spot. Right. He sent that message to everybody in the village, and that guy got lynched.
Ooh.
And yeah. that news prompted WhatsApp Meta to put a 5-message forward limit to any message that goes out there. So that's how rampant, like, you know, that's just one bad thing about data going out there unfiltered.
Yeah, no, I know. Just to follow up with that,
yeah,
Angela, we're going to have her on to talk about misinformation. Absolutely. Because your primary contact for dealing with misinformation, the librarians are actually trained on this. This is part of their, it's part of their training. So that's why she would be good to talk to. But she was mentioning that there are studies where false information just on social media travels 6 times faster than factual information.
Wow.
Because it's salacious and everybody wants to share it. Imagine crazy. That getting into the LLM pools.
Oof,
right. Yeah. And and you know, then it becomes just common knowledge almost immediately. Mm-hmm. So that's creepy to me.
Right. It is scary. Right. I'm sorry, we kind of went out of track. And I gave everybody a little sneak preview of what we'll talk about next episode.
But that's
coming
right.
Coming back on what we wanted to talk about today. So let's bring it down to assessment in higher education. Like, what do you think, where's assessment going at?
Well, I think traditional assessments aren't necessarily going to be reliable indicators of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like if you look at essays or multiple choice questions and summaries, and that throws fuel on the fire when you talk about online, which we do in another episode too. But what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to focus on process and revision more than output. And that's what came out of the conversations in English. For instance, they recommended, and they weren't opposed to using Grammarly.
Right.
But you have to do these, I think you can request authorship notes or tracks, things like that. And so they have to include that. You know, ultimately, there's a quote that comes out of teaching AI that I think is relevant here. And it's AI work should not be able to pass your course, but our new grading systems will need to make this clear and encourage even better AI assisted work. Which, you know, it's weird to pull a quote like that, but that's one that kind of stuck with me because I really think that's accurate, that AI shouldn't be able to pass your course if you're doing it correctly.
Right.
Because AI can now do most of the work if it's busy work, essays, multiple choice, because they're not reliable tools or metrics by which we assess learning. So that's what we're going to have to rethink. I don't know. What do you think? I mean,
absolutely, more than AI guy. No, but I mean, like, you know, this is, we kind of touched on this a little bit at the beginning of the podcast as well. It's we have to rethink the final output ideology. We need to think about the process. We need to think about the interpersonal relationships that we're building with our students. You know, there are so many things that need to go into this, because remember, again, like, you know, it's not just that I'm teaching them the content. I'm teaching them how to deliver content, how to stand up and speak in front of people, how to talk to somebody with respect. And you know, there are so many things that as educators we are doing for our students that really goes, you know, nobody really points it out for you at that point of time. But there is actually so much more that goes into it. Like, you know, whenever you're teaching, you show passion, you show dedication, and it's okay if sometimes you mess up or you forget. Like, the students are absolutely fine with it. They do not want somebody that knows everything, or, like, you know, or something that knows everything and is just, it's just kind of spit out things that it doesn't really understand. It just has a probability matrix somewhere where it knows that, hey, if I say these things to this person, I'm going to get the highest probability for it. Like, there is no there's no connection over there.
Right. Well, one of the things I do in class just related to that, not that I'm doing anything innovative, is I always tell the students that if they can demonstrate that I'm wrong about something, then I will give the entire class some points.
Yeah.
and occasionally they catch me. I mean, they do, because I'm not going to know everything. And when they do, what that tells me is it tells me they're engaging in a way that's different. And so I don't think you should necessarily have to give points to do that. They should be just ideal students and incentivized to just do that anyway, but they're not going to.
Right.
And so you have to think, you know, in terms of process and educational relevance. And I think that's where we're going to have to go. It's not just academic integrity, right? It's how do you get beyond just trying to catch them all the time? Here's part of the reason why I keep coming back to this. And I'll go back to our discussion with English, because we asked them, and we're going to ask everybody this, how much extra time over the course of a semester do you spend just trying to catch people who have used AI? What would the estimate of that time spent be?
Right.
And in one instance, it was 10 to 15 hours at least.
Like, wow.
Just over the course of the semester, just trying to catch using Turnitin and all those other things that we know are problematic. That is wasted time, I think. And that's contingent upon an old system.
Right.
Because you're trying to catch them. Because it's in product focused. Whereas if you just say, let's focus on the product or the process, and then you just have to be transparent and disclose that you used AI.
Right.
And you need to give me that output and you give me the prompts and everything that you use so that we can discuss and critique what you did there. Because I think that's where the learning can come in too. It's kind of like if you're a blacksmith. I've never been a blacksmith, so I apologize to all blacksmiths if I get this wrong. But if you take your apprentice and you say, all right, now make a horseshoe, and then they're screwing it up, but you're standing over them saying, all right, you know, try it this way and do this and do that. That's more the mentoring thing that you're talking about, I think. And
absolutely.
I think that's very practical and applied at the same time. So it's not the horseshoe that's important. It's the fact that you're making the horseshoe that becomes important. In the skills process. I don't know. I mean, do you guys do that over in your departments?
So we kind of try to do that. So we do like code longs and, you know, stuff, more stuff that is going to keep them away or give them a reason to, like, you know, code their own project. For example, last semester I started this thing where you have to record yourself explaining the project that you've done. Right. So just tell me why you did it, like why you chose this, and, you know, what's the reason why you've written this code this way. So what that does is, sure, ChatGPT can come up with a document that tells you why they've done what they've done, right? But you see, what that does psychologically is that forces the student to read what's been done or why ChatGPT has done it that way, right? And at least to say it out loud once. And that's the connection that I want to look for, because I'm starting to put reasoning, like rational thinking, in them. Right. So even if they can, like, you know, critique or, like, you know, go through something, because more often than not, like I said, ChatGPT might make a mistake. So when you're going through it, you're like, wait, this doesn't make sense. No, that can be. We didn't do this in class. That helps you understand stuff as well. That's just something that I feel like, you know, everybody's ChatGPTing stuff, and I don't hold it against them. I don't hold it against you. But if you don't care much, or if you're just like copy pasting stuff off of ChatGPT, like I use ChatGPT as well. I know I can understand ChatGPT, and it's pretty understandable at this point, right? It's not that good that it can get away with it. So yes, that's something that I kind of have used this semester. It's worked for the most part, and I also feel like, you know, I'm more engaged with the student, because half of these students, I never even hear them speak. I don't know how their voice sounds like. They never communicate with me. They just come to class and leave. So this gives me a reason to kind of, you know them a little better or understand what their thinking process is.
I think that's good, and that even helps them in the process. They learn where AI is not going to fill in the blanks, and they're going to have to do it, which requires them to know it. So that's more about revise, critique, explain, which I think probably is a better metric for understanding rather than regurgitation. And, you know, one of the things I've been teasing is this notion of, you know, all right, use AI to, for instance, create an outline for your paper. And then I want you to tell me what you changed, and I want to know why you changed it. Because if they do that, then that's more process. And then in the end, if they do it appropriately, they're learning. So writing the paper really isn't that difficult. I mean, that's one of the things we picked up in graduate school, I think, and it's tough to get students to understand this, particularly at the undergrad level. But at some point, if you just read all the books and read all the articles, writing the paper is actually easy.
Easy, yeah.
I mean, that's the easy part.
That's true.
And that's all ChatGPT is really doing, is it's just writing the stuff.
Exactly.
It's the reading and all that of the process.
Right. Right.
And I think, honestly, as they use AI, that's what they're trying to shortcut as well, mm-hmm. is the back-end work. And
it
so that's because everything is end product focused,
absolutely,
which is backwards because it's almost like we're grading products,
yeah,
rather than processes.
Yeah, so, and that's something
I don't know if that makes sense.
It does make sense, and that's something that we need to rethink. And excuse me, and that's where do you believe that the role of the faculty is now shifting in that case, and they're kind of trying to, you need to stop like focusing on the end product and be you need to think about starting or creating an experience.
Right. And I think that's, honestly, that's an opportunity that AI can offer. And so if we spend less time focusing on the end product, we don't spend that 10 to 15 hours a week trying to figure out if they cheated. We're not, sort of prison guards. What we become is we ask the question. I do ask this question in my class a lot because you get students who are point focused.
Yeah.
And I tell them, don't focus on the points because the points just take care of themselves if you learn. So my question is always, did you learn something today?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'll end many classes saying, are you learning?
Mm-hmm.
I know it's cheesy, but I think that's the opportunity for us is to say, all right, let's focus more on the learning.
Yeah.
Let's do something different. And if AI can open up opportunities for us to do that, I think that makes the professor more relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Under AI conditions than they might be under the conditions in which we're just evaluating end products. But differently, we become more relevant to the process.
Absolutely.
Because we did learn and we are technical experts and we have that informed technical expertise that AI will never have.
Right.
At least not in my lifetime.
That's true. And, I kind of talked to a few of my students about this as well. But they're like, all of that sounds really nice. And I agree with it. Like, we need experiences, we need critical thinking, we need process. But at the end of the day, the system right now is such, it's still point focused, right?
Right.
If you can't make 90%, you don't get an A.
Right.
If you can't get 80%, don't make a B. So like, one of them, they were telling me like, yes, all of this sounds good. And all of this is something that we would like, but at the end of the day, if I can get the points in my assignments or in my tests, my grades are going to fall. Like nobody's going to care in the job market if I had like a good learning experience. I won't get a job because I have like a 2.5 GPA.
Right.
But my experience was awesome. Like my critical thinking is awesome. My interpersonal skills are awesome. But, the system is kind of, how do I put it? Like, it's, like equity is still missing over here is probably something that I kind of felt him telling me that.
Well, I think if you look at the industry and the, just the job market in general, that's what they keep telling us is they keep telling us we want people with critical thinking skills. We want people that can communicate. I think the GPA focus, honestly, I think we do students a disservice in focusing only on grade points. And
I
get it. It's a metric. You can quantify things, and I'm a quantitative guy, but at the same time, some things make no sense to quantify, right? Mm-hmm. You need more qualitative measures. And I think that's the role, right?
Yeah.
Is you become more of a guide or a mentor,
absolutely.
Which is kind of what Miller says in his book. Professors aren't obsolete. They're essential.
Yeah.
They're guides and mentors and filters that ultimately you're teaching them how to think in particular ways,
mm-hmm.
not what to think and not what to regurgitate.
No,
I don't know. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And, thank you for saying that. I was going to say it in all caps to every professor out there. Like, you are not obsolete. You are essential and you matter. Again, like I said earlier, like, this is a 5,000-year-old process. And it's not going to go away. You think of yourself as the guiding light for this extreme change that's going to come or that is coming or that we are in the middle of right now. Right. So you are the person who is going to make sure that AI isn't misused, which is a big thing, right? And
right.
I think this set of faculty right now, we are in the forefront of a big change that's going to come. And I think this change is going to be here for a while. So assessment is going to change. Assignments are going to change. The way that we, the way that we deal with our students is going to change. So this is like a changing front, like K-12, any kind of educator, like K-12 or like, you know, professors, everybody's at the forefront and nobody's going to go away. Because at the end of the day, like I said, like passion, AI isn't going to take away the passion from you. AI isn't going to take away that dedication from you. And this matters to students. Like, you know, this is the reason why they show up in class every day. It's so that they can see you talk. They can hear you, move around or walk around, right? Just to turn it up a little bit. They can feel your passion, because that's what, at the end of the day, is really important in the role of a faculty. That's what I feel. What do you think, Sean?
No, I think that's absolutely true. And I think that's sort of the new academic baseline, if you
yes.
will, is that, you know, it's a new kind of literacy.
Yeah.
That we have to pay attention to, that we have to go in knowing that how AI is going to generate the content.
Right.
We have to know something about crafting and prompting.
Mm-hmm.
We have to know something about checking for accuracy and bias and other things that come out of AI or output.
Right.
And going back to what you said the last podcast, and the English faculty really liked that, was the notion mm-hmm. that English is becoming the new hot programming language, because AI can just turn that into code, right?
It
can turn it into Python script. It's going to be as accurate as you make it in
mm-hmm.
the prompt.
Yeah.
And so what that's going to mean then is it's going to mean that ultimately we have to verify claims. We have to identify hallucinations. We have
yeah.
to cite responsibly. We still have to do all that stuff.
Absolutely.
AI is not going to do all that heavy lifting for us. And even
mm-hmm.
if you put a book in AI and say, all right, summarize this book for me, it's not going to do it that well. It's
right.
going to scrape things. Have you ever done that, as a side note, the notebook where it
yeah.
turns a book
mm-hmm.
into a podcast?
That's pretty fun. Like, listeners, if you haven't done that, go to Google Notebook
it's
LM.
Notebook,
yeah.
yeah. Notebook LM.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put a book in and then you say turn it into a podcast, it will do that. And I did it with some theory text
yeah.
recently, and I was listening to the podcast. I was going, you know, this is really engaging. It's interesting, but it keeps missing all the things that are important about the theories.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of scrapes the surface. And
right.
the point is that's the new skill set,
mm-hmm.
is knowing enough to know when it's actually not accurate. Right.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah, and that kind of leads us to, like, you know, where's curriculum at? Like, you know, where's, like, you know, what's happening with that? What do you feel?
Well, I think, you know, you got to start thinking interdisciplinary. You got to
mm-hmm.
think, you know, what is AI and creativity? What is AI and reasoning? You need to shift your content output more to judgment, maybe collaboration, creativity, and context. And these are just the ways I think about it,
mm-hmm.
rather than, once again, this just end output kind of model.
Right.
There's a quote from Teaching AI, right? We were talking about, what was that quote? If the AI, what is it?
Yeah, I think it was, if the AI can do the work, what value are we adding through our teaching?
Right. That was the one, because
yeah.
that's the one that really stuck with me. And I think that's the question is, you know, what learning outcomes should every student achieve? And then you have to factor in, now what is that with AI?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And should every major articulate how AI fits into its future? I don't think everybody has to use AI, for the
right.
record, but
mm-hmm.
you have to have that conversation.
Absolutely.
Where is AI fitting into this?
Absolutely. I feel the same. I mean, everybody needs to have that conversation and make that informed decision if they really want to leave AI out of their classroom or their topic, or if they want to involve AI in some way. And I
right.
almost feel like, you know, if somebody is doing it in their field, if we give them a chance to kind of show how they're doing it, I
mm-hmm.
think, you know, that might end up being helpful for somebody else.
Right. Yeah.
And that, yeah. And that kind of leads us to, like, you know, institutional responses and policy changes, right? Because again, AI is here
right.
to stay. So what's allowed? What must be disclosed? What's considered misconduct? Like, there are so many questions.
Right. And we're actually going to talk about that in greater detail in I haven't invited him yet, but I'm going to ask Will Cooper out of the academic misconduct group to actually come and talk about it. But I think one of our concerns is if we're still police and gatekeepers, what's going to end up happening is we're going to flood academic misconduct rather than shift our understanding and think differently. So I think you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to get our heads around. I mean, we're not going to solve it in one podcast, but I think the best way to think about it is think in terms of North Stars. And we've talked about this. Mm-hmm. We have to think in terms of what will be touched by AI and what will never be touched by AI.
All right.
And oddly enough, that's kind of what that law that the Arkansas legislature is about to put through. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what its guiding principle is. I think that's a guiding principle across the spectrum in conversations about AI. What's going to be AI and what's not.
Yeah, that's correct. And we need some institutional clarity on that as well, because we need to start training faculty. And, you know, we just can't govern with rules, right? If we haven't trained anybody and we're like, hey, these are a bunch of rules, please follow them. Is anybody policing those rules? Like, what's happening with that? Like,
you can create rules, but if nobody knows what they mean and how to follow them, they're not going to follow them. Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. So all you do is you create this class of deviants and criminals, right? Yeah. But just implementing a rule rather than it requires culture change. So the university is going to have not just a policy, but buy in culturally. We've talked about some ideas about how to get AI into coursework and some other things. I mean, we're just going to have to do that to help students shift their mindset to reduce on the front end the degree to which they use it inappropriately.
Absolutely. Go for it. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, bottom line is we just have to adapt.
Yeah.
I mean, in the same way that we don't teach geometry in a pit in Athens, Greece, drawing circles on the ground.
Right.
We now have to change the way we teach all of our disciplines because of this.
Agreed. And, you know, that kind of leads to our closing frame is we should really see this as an opportunity, right?
Right.
As an opportunity
to
change. Yeah. It's disruptive, yes, but this is also an opportunity for us to kind of change stuff, and what do you think? What do you think about that?
Well, no, I think that's true. I think the way we approach this is going to be a function of the anxiety that we produce around it and our reaction.
Yeah.
But once again, we're not in a battle to prevent it at this point. It's more of how do we adapt to it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reactionary approaches are just wrongheaded. It's an opportunity to rethink and, oddly enough, reengage.
Yeah.
I think the more I've tried to integrate it into my classes, I really don't do that much, but I use notebook LMs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The more the students get fired up and excited because they can ask it questions, and the more conversations we're actually having in class that are based on the material because they're actually asking these questions. And when it doesn't answer, they come and ask me.
Agreed.
Right. So I think if you spin it appropriately, and once again, of the two of us, I'm really more the downside guy. So I don't want to sound like, hey, let's all go AI. but I do see a lot of opportunity for it. So
absolutely.
I don't know what you think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like use it as a friend, as a help for you almost, right? So if there's like I was saying, you can train your own GPTs at this point. So hey, if there's a topic that you think it's pretty complex and you know you're gonna get like a ton of emails about it or a lot of people lining up in your office hours, train a GPT with all of those questions or with all of those topics and let the users or let the students kind of break that GPT, right? Ask as many questions as you want, break it. If it doesn't work, then come to me. That gets them engaged. Yeah, that gets them engaged. That gets them to write better questions, better framing for prompts. So, you know, you're kind of teaching them or training them that without them knowing it.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty cool.
I think that's true. And if nothing else, put your syllabus in a notebook
or that
LM and then just say, here's the syllabus, just ask it questions and it will answer the questions about your syllabus, right?
Absolutely.
So baby steps, start there.
I agree. And like, you know, if we are willing to adapt, like there's a quote from Teaching AI, if you're willing to adapt, we can make teaching more human and not less. And, you know, right. that's what I want to end this podcast with. Do you want to set up for the next episode, Sean?
Sure. So episode 3, we're going to dig into academic integrity, ethical use. We might talk a little bit more about designing assignments, but mostly I think we'll focus on the ethics and trying to create that culture change or understand the culture change that's necessary to reduce academic misconduct. And then this is two-parter, but we're going to do this and then two episodes, and then we're going to have another one coming mm-hmm. back to it that'll probably be a little more grounded. What we're doing in these first ones is we're trying to hit the broad strokes.
Yeah.
Then we're going to ask people to come in and talk about specific issues.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in sort of starting podcast 4 forward, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
So the next one is still big and philosophical, but I think it'll be interesting.
I think it'll be interesting as well. And then we'll start something called the AI In series. So, you know, we'll probably, we'll keep you hanging for that and we'll let
that's
you know
right.
more about that. All right, cool. So thank you so much and see you in the next one.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.